Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. We are breaking down college football and the NFL draft coming up. Joining us for that, Ryan Roberts of A to Z Sports. Ryan, how you been doing, man? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you guys, too. I'm doing great. How's everybody over there?
Yeah, we're doing fine, Ryan. Thank you. I know you covered Notre Dame for a while, and we're watching the game here. It's late in the second quarter. It's 3-3. This game seems to be in the running lane of Georgia, because if you look back during the season, basically other than the one loss, Notre Dame tsunamied everybody. I mean, it wasn't close. Yeah. This game is rolling in the kind of path that Georgia has played games this year.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a fair analysis. I mean, obviously, you think back to, like, the Clemson game, for instance, right? The first game of the year where it was a really close, tight defensive battle at the end of the first half. And then the second half is when Georgia came out and, you know, started creating some explosive plays and kind of rolled over ugly for Clemson on that way. So I think that's fair to say. I will say this, though, is that when you're comparing the two and, you know, use, like, a Clemson in comparison to Notre Dame, for instance, Notre Dame does have a lot of mirroring characteristics to Georgia. And I think that kind of plays in the favor of it remaining a close game until the end. I do think that this game is going to be a one-score game. Anybody can have a chance to win in the end. I get that vibe because I think Notre Dame does have – it's funny, because since Carson Beck got hurt and now you have Gunnar Stock in a quarterback, I think that they are almost – like they are almost mirror images of each other right now, this current state. You know, Carson Beck in, it would be a little bit of a different animal, but you have on both sides – an athletic mobile quarterback, you have offenses that do want to establish the run, and you have really just stingy defenses that want to play a physical brand of football, and the offensive lines that want to run block, they want to get downhill, they want to be physical. So I think it's a mirror image of one another, which is why I think that the end result's going to be a little bit different than a couple of those games. But in theory, I agree with you that if it does become a game where you're going down the stretch, one-score game, I think it does lend into the Georgia's favor a little bit because they've been a little bit more accustomed to those football games. But I do think Notre Dame's a little bit of a different type of team than what they've been doing that to recently.
You saw glimpses of it, and then, bang, they get clocked by Michigan. But the last 2 weeks, oh, my God. If they continue to play at that level, nobody's going to touch Ohio State. I mean, they are so talented, and you see the best of them. And it was almost like they needed the shock of a loss to put them back on the right track. But, man, offensively, defensively, special teams, they don't have a weakness. Now, again, it's to continue that because you never know on any given day. But right now, man, Ohio State looks like a team that's going to be very, very difficult to keep out of being the national champ.
Yeah, I it was funny enough, man, is that last night in Slack, I was pitching that idea. I didn't end up writing the article. I think somebody else did. But it is – I think Michigan woke up a beast a little bit now, right? Like, for the fourth straight year, you didn't win the Big Ten championship game. You didn't beat Michigan, right? So, like, it shocked the system. And we heard it all week afterwards. It was like, Ryan Day's job security, right? Like, if he doesn't win big in the playoffs – then you might be in a little bit of trouble here. You know what I mean? So I do think that that game woke them up a little bit. Now, I will say this, is that I think they're easily now the most balanced team that's left in this playoff. Like you said it, I think you said it perfectly. There's not really a easy weakness to find. The only potential weakness there is if they beat themselves, which it's happened in the past, you know, like there's a reason that Ryan Day was a little bit on the, at least I wouldn't say he was on the hot seat, but like people had their antennas up after that Michigan game, because we have seen that song and dance from Ryan Day already during the tenure at Ohio State. You are paying a lot of money for that roster. You have NFL dudes on both sides of the football on every level of offense and defense. So I do think there's a lot of pressure on them. But I agree with you, in a vacuum, if they're playing the best version of themselves, I don't think anybody in the playoffs can beat them. I really don't. But it's going to be about the human element of this conversation, the human error. Can Ryan Day continue showing what he showed the last two playoff games? And can Will Howard continue to be mistake-free? Because if they do, I do think that they have the best team in the playoff, and I think it's by a solid margin at this point.
You look at the teams that have advanced, and I look at how it ended for Texas in losing again to Georgia, and then how they played yesterday. Man, I would want to play Texas. I'll be honest with you. They got a lot of talent, immense amount of talent on that football team. But, I mean, it's hard to say because of how far they've gone, but they're almost like an underachieving team. I don't know better term to use, but to get to this point, and yet you really haven't overly impressed anyone at this stage.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also fair to say. I would say it like this, is that I think that the volatility that you see with Texas, because like when Texas is at their best, they look like they can beat anybody in college football at their best. When they're at their medium to worst, they look like they are very vulnerable. And we saw, I mean, you're up by 16 points in the fourth quarter. Like, that should have been an end game. Like, that was easy, right? Like, the first, you know, three quarters plus, you look like the best team on the field against Arizona State by a large margin. Like, it was a chasm. But unfortunately, I think that when you have volatility at the quarterback position, and it's not all on Quinn Ewers. Like, it's not. That's not what I'm saying at all. But he is the microcosm of this team, though, is that when Quinn Ewers is at his best, Texas can beat anybody. But when he's not playing sharp, and he wasn't very sharp yesterday, like he threw a couple great balls down the stretch, obviously, in an overtime, but he was not a great version of himself yesterday. And I think that's what you saw, is that when it stagnated a little bit, that Texas defense is great. Jude Barron, Anthony Hill, like so many future NFL players, but when your offense is not being a complementary part of your football team, eventually you're on the field too long. Eventually you get a little bit tired. I mean, I think Arizona State ran like 90 plays yesterday, whatever the heck it was. It was a wild number. So I think that it's a volatility head coach, quarterback, you know, and I think Steve Sarkisian is a good coach, but again, he's fighting that same battle that we were talking about with Ryan Day, and what Dan Lanning is going to go through now moving forward here is that the consistency in those big moments, right? Like, that's the next step that a coach like Steve Sarkisian needs to make, and I think that the volatility at head coach in certain aspects, but more the volatility at quarterback yesterday, because I think if he makes a couple better reads, a couple more accurate balls, doesn't turn the football over, I think that game ends up being a 2-3 score game in the end, ultimately. So I think they need to be a little bit better at the couple spots that matter most, but they are a very talented team, and if they get hot at the right time, I think they can beat anybody, but the question is if they will be consistent in that moment.
Your thoughts, he made it official today, but it's no surprise. Jalen Milroe announced that he's coming out early for the 2025 draft. And with Jalen, I know one thing, he'll win the offseason. He's a good kid, and athletically, he's going to test through the roof. He's got a cannon for an arm. It's his erratic nature and his footwork and his body balance and the short intermediate throws that are all over the board. He actually throws, for me, a better medium-long throw and the deeper throws better than the short stuff. But, you know, it is a supply and demand business, and they don't have enough. And there's always a Dr. Phil in the NFL. I can quam all of those ills that Jalen's got. And I know one thing, just as a human being, he's going to win this offseason. Now, somebody's going to have to take a shot on him because of that erratic nature in the short intermediate part of the game.
Well, no matter what position for NFL scouts, they convince themselves they can fix someone, right? And like you said, as long as it checks out mentally, they're going to say that they can figure out some of the processing issues, some of the footwork issues. Like, those things can, in theory, at least from the footwork especially, they can be fixed. Now, Jalen was actually, I was told that he was wrestling with this decision a little bit. Like, there was a few weeks ago when he was playing a little bit better football, more consistent, it was like a, everyone knew that he was going to come out, like he was going to answer, because it's not a good quarterback class. You know what I mean? Like, it's Cam Ward, it's Shedeur Sanders, and then it's who the heck is quarterback three? Well, it's probably going to be Jalen Milroe by default. Now, whether that default happens in the top 10, late first round, early second round, that is still a little bit of the question. There's volatility there, and he is all over the boards according to certain teams, right? Like, there's some teams that are very kind of entranced by the athleticism and the arm strength that you talked about, but then there's others that, you know, they had their hesitations, right? Because it is a mentally driven position, obviously, playing the quarterback position. But I think that you can buy into him pretty easily. He was, I think, second-guessing that decision a couple weeks ago as he started kind of hitting a little bit of a lull in a rough spot of the season. But You said it, it's a demand position, and especially when the quarterback class is not great. So he's going to get overdrafted, I think, based upon what his film is, but you are going to take a bet that you can get the best out of him. And there's, I mean, I could see a bunch of teams, honestly, just saying, like, I could fix that, because you don't make a lot of guys – there's not a lot of guys on the planet Earth that play the quarterback position that are 6'1 plus, 220 pounds, probably run high 4.3s and have a cannon for an arm. Like that, those, a lot of those just don't exist. So someone's going to take a gamble. The question is it top 10 gamble? Is it for end of first round gamble where someone comes back into the back of the first round? That's the only question I have as far as like where the slot is ultimately going to be for a Milroe.
Yeah, I watch Anthony Richardson at Florida. I mean, he didn't overwhelm me throwing the football. But, man, once he worked out for everybody, it was like, whoa. And he got picked as a top five guy. You got to cover him. Your thoughts on where the LSU program is today and Brian Kelly. Brian didn't want to tangle at all with the transfer portal. I mean, he said it after year one. We're going to build this strictly through basically the high school ranks. Every once in a while we'll reach out and get a transfer guy, but we're not going heavy into that. He didn't change his tune real quick with that. Your thoughts on Kelly? Can he be the guy that can lead LSU to another national championship?
It's a great question. Brian Kelly is all about raising the floor of programs, right? And we've seen that at we saw that at Central Michigan. We saw that at Cincinnati. We saw that at Notre Dame. I mean, honestly, we saw that at LSU the first year when there was a full roster turnover and he overachieved and, you know, won his side of the SEC and made it to the SEC championship game. Like, that was overachieving. And the way he does that is he raises the floor. He's got that kind of dictator feel to him, right? A guy that, no nonsense, this is how we do things, this is the culture we're building, this is everything involved that you need to do to be a part of my program. And it works in the fact of, I don't really ever see, barring something just catastrophic, I don't see Brian Kelly losing. I don't see him not winning more than 8 games a season, right? Like, he's going to win 8, 9, probably at a minimum, and then in a really good year, he'll probably win 10 or 11. But I do have my hesitation on saying that he's going to win a national championship at LSU, because this is going to be a fascinating offseason. Next year is a make or break year, not in the sense of he'll get fired if he doesn't have a great season, but it is make or break in the ideology of what's going to win with him at LSU, because like you said, he is a very high school driven coach. And I think that that's the right way to go. I mean, like, for me, I always say that, like, you want to dip into the portal because you want to, not because you have to, right? And unfortunately, he had to a degree this offseason. There's a lot of pressure behind him, but you had to rebuild the wide receiver room. You had to get a lot of parts on defense to be able to really help yourself, you know, take that next step, hopefully. Sorry if you guys hear some yelling in the background. I guess Notre Dame fans in the house. But but for me, Coach Kelly is going to always win the games that he should, and he's going to raise the floor. But this offseason is going to show if he is doing a good enough job on the recruiting trail and developing, because he's doing a good job as far as, like, the ranks of the classes at the end of the day, but now it's about developments. You know, those sophomores, can they take a step forward? Can those juniors take a step forward? Can you retain your talents and then also add to it? Because he's obviously adding a lot of good players in the portal, but I think the baseline and the ceiling of this program is going to be determined upon how he is developing those recruiting classes that he's bringing in. So I have my hesitation. He's going to raise the floor. I just am a little bit in between on how much he's going to raise the ceiling at LSU. That's my big hesitation.
Ryan, definitely appreciate the time. Enjoy the rest of this game and all that comes with the rest of the NFL season and also the end of the college football playoff. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ryan.
Absolutely, fellas. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
All right.
NFL draft and college football analyst Ryan Roberts of A to Z Sports. You can check out all his work there.